You're listening to a podcast on the Black Fur Network.
Episode 40, Susan Cox Powell. Following the disappearance of his wife Susan, Josh Powell was locked in a custody battle for his two children with Susan's parents. A routine supervised visit with their social worker Elizabeth resulted in her calling 911, stating Josh took the kids into the house, shutting the door in her face. What worried Elizabeth the most was that she could smell gasoline. And now we'll discuss crimes like these. Hello and welcome to Crimes Like These with me, SJ.
Me, Paul.
And me, Sam.
It's episode 40.
Yeah.
We should do something for our 50th.
Yeah, we definitely should. We definitely should. Get your thinking caps on. We should definitely do something special for that. Talking of special, obviously 40 is quite a big milestone, but we have been away for a few weeks, so there hasn't been an episode, and the reason for that is we have recorded an interview with a friend of a friend, let's say. Our interviewee is someone who used to work in the police. He specialised in digital forensics. So we had a lot of questions for him. Yeah. So we recorded that last week. And yeah, that interview will be our next episode. So that will be episode 41. I hope you're all very excited about it because It was a great recording, wasn't it?
It was fun.
Really interesting stuff. So
really articulate guy and good talker.
Really switched on, really clever, knows his shit. Absolutely. So if that's your bag, be sure to listen to episode 41. How are we anyway? I know it's only been a week since we've seen each other, but
yeah.
good.
Yeah. Yeah,
I watched all 10 Fast and Furious films this week, plus Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, Paul, what's with the self-torture? I don't understand.
I hadn't seen past 3, right?
Right.
Because I'm not really a car guy, and I'm not like, you know, they're all right films, first two. Man, I watched them this time. I fucking loved them.
Really? Like,
all 11 films are incredible.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I have just gone down in my estimation. I'm like, Paul's like, chill, these things are such cool things. And I'm like,
Okay, so they go from being street racing, right? They're just street racing, racing cars, winning cars, you know, hijack the old truck. 10, standard. They're superstar Navy SEAL hijacking special forces, flying, grabbing, defying, magic car owning crazy people, and it is a joy.
Is 10 the one with the submarine?
No, that's I don't know, they'll merge into one pretty much. Oh, okay. It could be seven.
Right, okay.
I know there's fucking submarine.
I think you might be right. I think it's 9. I know it's one of the later ones.
Do yourself a favor and watch them. They are absolutely brilliant. They're the stupidest films ever made. But that makes them so good. They're like 80s films for the modern day. Like, the heroes are bulletproof. Like, no one ever manages to hit them with a weapon. They do death-defying things, like gravity-defying things. Sorry, I'm getting too excited.
I can't believe you are this animated about the Fast and Furious franchise.
I had so much fun watching them. Like, and Vin Diesel is in a different film franchise to everyone else. Everyone else is in on the joke, right? Everyone knows how silly these films are. Yeah. Not Vin Diesel.
He takes it very seriously. Yeah, that is his cash cow. You're right.
So... Yeah, he is going for the Oscar in literally every scene. Like, everything he says is like a big statement. I'm sorry, I'll stop talking about Fast and Furious. What have you guys been up to?
The only reason that I watched Fast and Furious films is Michelle Rodriguez, because I think she's great. Awesome, yeah. I just love her in everything. I love her in everything.
Charlize Theron later on is fucking brilliant.
Oh, she's so bad.
She is loving that role.
She's totally phoning it in, though.
No, she's having so much fun. She's hamming it up and throwing about. She's having the time of her life.
It's so bad.
Statham's brilliant. The Rock's brilliant. I can't stand Statham.
Oh, really? What?
Yeah, I don't like him.
Oh, I do. But just because I just think, like, I obviously don't know him, but I just think, like, it just seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, yeah. I bet he is, yeah.
Yeah? He very much knows, like, his genre, and he doesn't give a fuck, and he's like, "That I'm happy to do this and to own it." Yeah. And I don't think he takes himself too seriously.
Yeah, you hear him in interviews and stuff. He's always taking the piss out of himself.
Yeah, I quite like that. Why not? Like, if you've done that well off the back of it, you haven't got to always be, you know, your Leonardo DiCaprio's, do you?
It's true.
Oh, shit, we hadn't mentioned, sorry, this is, we have changed the format of the podcast. We now just talk about the Fast and the Furious. That's all we do.
This general chat section is now Fast and the Furious section.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. I don't know why I got so excited.
You have got very animated. I love animated for
group chat recently. Well, yesterday. I forget what I've got to be going on about fucking the Fast and the Furious.
Amazing. I've been watching some horror. I've been catching up on some horror. So I watched Scream 6.
Amazing. Cool. What do you think?
Yeah, it was really good.
It's good.
I think 5 is still better.
Oh, no, I think 6 is better. 6 is my second favourite now after the first one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I loved it. Wow. I've seen it three or four times.
Wow. I kind of guessed what was going on, sort of. But yeah, I said, because we watched 5 again, because we hadn't seen it since the original release. So I was like, I want to watch 5 again before we watch 6 to refresh my memory, kind of thing. And it's so good. I think I do prefer 5 though. But yeah, it's good. It's good. I watched something. I can't even remember the name of it, but I was recommended it. It was like, you know, oh, this is a really tough watch, blah, blah, blah. And I was a bit like, meh.
Rarely are, right?
It's all right.
I hear that a lot, don't you?
To watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I genuinely can't even remember the name of it. I can't remember what it was. So it was obviously very good.
Yeah.
It stuck in my mind. I did finally watch my 4K copy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre as well.
Yeah.
Which is fucking great. And the game is coming out soon as well. So I can't wait to play it.
Excellent. I worry about that in 4K because, like, the graininess of that film is half its effect for me.
Yeah, I agree. And the first time I watched it, it was a sort of really grainy, you know, just not all, it didn't look awful, but I think it adds to it because obviously it's from 1974 or whatever, you know, I think you need to watch it in, but the transfer is really good. Is really, really good.
Because I can't watch my Blu-ray copy of Jaws.
Oh, really?
Is it too polished?
Too clean.
Yeah, it's too clean.
Yeah.
I can only watch the DVD because my DVD copy has got the untouched theatrical version.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's brilliant. That's the only version I can watch because I'm a film snob.
Even though it's like Fast and Furious, but
yeah. No, no. I love Fast and Furious.
Sorry. Thank you for correcting me. That was a faux pas.
I think that's about it. We're watching Abbott Elementary on Disney. That's really good. And Barry. And it's...
I'm waiting for that to finish before I bang that season out.
Yeah.
Has it finished
It's. I think the finale was this week, but we haven't... Or last week, but we haven't watched it yet. I think we've got a couple to watch. But yeah, we've blasted through like the first three seasons in like a few weeks.
It's really good.
I did put it on yesterday, but I was too tired. Like, you know me, my ADHD brain, I have to be in a certain mode to concentrate on something. Yeah. And it was not the night.
It took a few episodes for me to get into because it is a very strange sort of concept, because like, you know, he's, you've got the action and the hitman side, and then, you know, he's taking up acting lessons
And loves it,
and he ends up loving it, and he ends up being really good at it, but he has to sort of like you know, do a bit of method acting and call on his past experiences as a hitman to like conjure up this rage for like certain scenes in like you know, doing theater and stuff like that. And everyone's like going, wow, you're so good, you're so convincing, where did you get that from? But he has to go to like a really dark place, and it messes with him. But it's a really, really good show. Really good show. Awesome. Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, so that's about it, really.
I watched a documentary on, I think I've nearly finished, I haven't finished it yet, a documentary on Netflix, White Boy Rick, about White Boy Rick, the drug dealer. So it's like a drug dealer at like, I think younger than 17, but then gets arrested at 17 for, because he's in possession of so many grams worth of coke or something, and he gets arrested for it, but it turned out that he was an informant for the FBI when he was younger. But then from where I've got to so far, the FBI kind of just dropped him. They didn't need him anymore. They had everything they needed from him, but he wasn't informed that he was just dropped, so he carried on in this world and exchanging drugs, and then all of a sudden they're like, arrest him, and he's still incarcerated. And this is like, he was arrested in the 90s.
Shit.
I believe it was the 90s. Early 90s, anyway, at least. And he's, so really, really good. Wow. So, yeah, I'll be watching that. And up into the theatre, because, you know.
Yeah.
Watched The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Okay.
Which is a Neil Gaiman.
I was going to say that.
Gaiman.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman, yeah.
Yeah. And I just went because my friend wanted to go and see it, and I was like, yeah, whatever, I like Neil Gaiman, we'll just go. And so my expectation, even though I really like Neil Gaiman, my expectation wasn't high. It wasn't like something that I really wanted to see.
Yeah,
it was fucking brilliant. It was really? So good. Yeah, like the like lyrical dancing and stuff in it was just amazing. I was just not prepared for it to be as beautiful as what it was, and I cried. And I looked at her and I was like, what the fuck you brought me to see this for? I'm just sat here crying. It was really, really good. Really good.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So, I like Neil Gaiman stuff. I've watched like the TV show adaptations and things like that. Like The Sandman and what was the Gods one? Is it American Gods?
American Gods.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was Bad Omens?
Bad Omens is the other one. Yeah. I've not seen
Good Omens. Good Omens. Bad Omens is the band.
Yes. You're right, yes.
You've got all the Gaiman fans screaming at
me. I know, yeah.
Don't come for us. It's just too many omens out there, guys. Just let it go.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. But really good. So
excellent.
That's me, really. And tanning off because it's sunny, and that's my addiction, is the sun.
Nice. Well, let's bring it down a level, because this chat is far too jolly, and we've got a horrific case to talk about.
Yes.
And that is the disappearance of Susan Cox Powell. I say disappearance because she is still missing, technically. But presumed dead. Let's dive right in. So, background. We'll do a little bit of background for Susan and Josh, who is her husband, their relationship, before we get into the disappearance and aftermath, shall we say. Susan Cox was born 16th of October 1981 in New Mexico. To parents Judy and Charles, who is known as Chuck. So for reference, Chuck is Susan's dad, who seemed, from interviews and stuff like that, he just seems like one of the nicest guys
ever.
So fatherly. And he was just such an amazing guy.
Yeah, reminded me of my dad in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. Just really, I mean, he does most of the talking, like, you know, in interviews and things like that when they, you know, about the case and stuff. And he just comes across so genuine.
He does.
So down to earth. Just a genuinely lovely guy. By all accounts, Susan was really good, you know, in high school. She was very outgoing. Like, her friends described her as outgoing. They went to church a lot. This is very prevalent. This continues, obviously, after her marriage to Josh, and that's how she meets Josh.
Yeah, specifically the LDS.
It's LDS, so that's Latter-day Saints. Which
we
know.
From Chatham, Latter-day Saints.
So yeah, I mean, there's not much else to talk about Susan, really.
She was just quite grounded, wasn't she? She was just very, she's come across very wholesome and grounded.
Very, yeah. And she always wanted to get married and have children and settle down and things like that. She obviously had a really good home life as well. But let's get on to Josh. So Josh was a little bit older. So he was born January 20th, 1976. I even Googled how to pronounce this, and now I've forgotten. I think it's pronounced Puyallup. I think it's Puyallup, something like that. Anyway, it's Washington State. To parents, Stephen and Terry, Josh did display some concerning behaviors as a child or teenager specifically. He allegedly killed gerbils belonging to one of his sisters. Yeah, weird. As you do. There's one tick on the profile.
Animals, yeah.
Animal cruelty, murder. Yeah.
Inflation.
Yeah. Yeah. He once allegedly threatened his mother with a butcher knife, as you do. He did also attempt suicide by hanging on one occasion as well, which is also concerning. Nothing ever seems to have come of that. Like, he wasn't, there's no evidence or records to say that he underwent psychiatric evaluation or therapy. Nothing.
So.
Maybe not back in those days, no.
Imagine. Particularly one of his parents would have kept him well away from that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Particularly his dad, Stephen. And you'll hear all about Stephen later on in the episode.
Won't you just?
Yeah. Sorry, jumping back to Susan. She trained as a cosmetologist, so like beauty therapy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She also had a realtor license because she wanted to get into real estate, apparently.
Yeah, he did too, I think.
Yeah, I think that was the original
plan,
wasn't it?
In 2008, though. What a terrible year to get into real estate.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, you couldn't have timed it better, could you, really? Jesus. Josh had a bachelor's degree in business, and he worked for a number of different companies over the years. And he lived in Seattle for a while as a student at the University of Washington. So Susan and Josh met at an LDS event. It was a course, wasn't it, in November 2000, and by the April... by April 2001, they were married. So a really, really short relationship there. So
she was 19, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was 19. Yeah,
that does tend to happen, though, doesn't it, in like these religious sectors? Because it's like in, you know, above what they consider to do, everything above board and like in the eyes of God and so on and so forth. So it's not, it's not like unusual, but it obviously it is quick.
It's expected.
Yeah. Like, that's a to expect to know someone in that amount of time. There's just
you don't. No. Yeah, exactly. You don't.
No,
there's just no way you can fully know a person in less than 6 months.
which becomes very apparent.
So yeah, they get married in April 2001, and they go on to have two children. So Charles is born in 2005 and Braden is born in 2007. So Susan ends up working at Wells Fargo, which is an American bank, after they relocate to Utah. And they briefly moved in with Josh's parents as well for a short period of time after they got married.
Yeah, lived in the dining room.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Josh had a lot of siblings as well, didn't he? He had, what, two brothers and two sisters. Two brothers and two sisters, yeah. I can never remember the other brother's name. Michael was one.
John.
Was it John? Yeah, and then
John's part of the story later.
Yeah, and Michael.
Is it?
It's Michael. The car.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, and the suicide.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Michael.
Michael, yes. Michael.
Yeah, it's Michael. And two sisters, Alina and Jen.
Oh, shit. Jennifer.
Jennifer Graves, because she's married, yeah. They lived with Josh's parents, Stephen and Terry. Because they divorced in 1992.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was so unclear on his wife when she left. Nothing I watched barely mentioned her. Watched a 3-hour documentary on Hayley. Yeah. Barely mentioned the woman.
Yeah. So, his parents divorced in 1992. Whilst they were living with Stephen and Terry, Steve develops a somewhat obsession, shall we say.
I don't think there's a big enough word for it.
No, there isn't a word for it. Obsession is scratching the surface, basically.
Hands down, one of the creepiest fucking things I've ever witnessed.
It's so...
Well, I wasn't there. I didn't witness it, but like watching the documentary.
Because there's so much footage, so... just for the listeners, if you're not familiar with the case, there's a lot of home videos that Steve recorded. He was obsessed with this camcorder that he had, and he was constantly filming the family, himself and
but
Susan.
Doing really odd things, like
very odd things.
Doing really ordinary things, but the odd thing was that he was filming them, like. Yeah. He would film himself putting deodorant on and just weird shit. Like it's so fucking weird. And who was he making them for? Well, I can't get my head around it.
Yeah, I think he was as obsessed with himself as he was with Susan.
Oh my God.
I think he was, yeah.
It was all about the way he looked and it was just gross.
He just seemed really like, when you look at the footage, look, because there's one part where there's like footage of him dancing, and he's full on dancing like how you would stereotypically say dancing
like
a dad.
It's Buffalo Bill in fucking Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, and it's like, I was watching it and I was like, it's like he's so like simple in terms of easily pleased. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
That is what he finds either joy in or hilarious. And I'm like watching it like, you look like a twat.
Yeah.
But he's just there like, look how fucking hilarious I am, because he's that level of basic.
Yeah.
That's kind of when I watched it, that's the vibe I got from him.
Mm.
You're a basic
Stephen
bitch.
And Josh are both wet noodles of men.
Yes.
Oh,
they are.
They're
just lame.
They're the sort
so
of guys. Yeah. I bet they can't do anything.
No.
They're the sort of people that call people out to change light bulbs.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
I bet they can't throw balls. I bet it's like those 3 feet. They're just that kind of, they're just so fucking pathetic, the pair of them. They're so whiny and I hate
just
them.
Giant
so
man babies.
Much.
Giant man babies.
They're just wet. Like they're wet noodles. Like I think that's perfect description for them, really. They're just wet and just lame.
It's crazy. Yep. I tell you what, they the society wants to get rid of masculinity. Get rid of it. That's what you'll be left with. Men like that. Is that what you want?
God, could you imagine? Oh.
I can't
imagine.
Oh
my God. It's just, that would just be a word. It sounds, this is like such a trend, on trend word to say, but it would be just be a world full of icks. Like they, when I was watching footage of them, I did just watch and I was like, you are a walking ick. You're just gross. Gross. Yeah. Vile, wet, lying.
I'm sure you can just go on to YouTube. Just type in Stephen Powell home videos.
Yeah. And
enjoy.
Enjoy is the wrong word, but yeah, just you'll get a flavour of you know what we're how we're trying to describe him, because there are no words.
And like Stephen's like just the way he like talks, but like his descriptive words, like I have, what did he say? Something like I've had the most arousing experience of my life. Honestly, I actually vomited in my mouth when he said those words.
I mean. Oh, she turns me on so much. I'm in a permanent state of turned on.
Yeah.
What?
It's just like,
this was after the foot rub, wasn't it?
Mm. That was after he's narrating this himself.
Yeah.
Like, this is him talking on his own video to himself.
Yeah.
Oof. That's really, it is really odd, isn't it?
I think he watches them. I think he watched them back. Like watched him, like himself describe that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like a form of memento, isn't it? Because he did like a memento, didn't he?
Oh yes, he did. Oh,
well, let's get there slowly because there's too much here to reveal. So, all right, now listeners, if you haven't watched this, you're probably thinking, okay, so he liked camcorder and was a bit weird, like recording himself doing weird shit. I guess way further than that.
Oh,
so he would film Susan like all the time with and without her knowledge, like just shove the camera in her face and just be all weird and say weird shit. And he would
and
hide
in
a van.
Josh.
And in front of Josh. Yeah. And he would hide in a van outside her work and film her walk into the car. And he would be saying things to himself like, she knows I'm here. And then she gets in the car and just pulls her skirt, adjusts her skirt a little bit. And he goes, she did that for me.
Oh, yeah, he's so convinced she was doing it all for him.
Yeah,
and like then just would zoom in on a random body part, like an ankle.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know, this is so weird.
But then say really creepy fucking things over the top of it.
Yeah,
like oh, she's so sexy. Oh
yeah,
my
God. It's just so
it's so creepy.
So, it really fucking made me feel horrible. This
it
guy
was very voyeuristic, wasn't it? It did make you feel like you wanted to shower afterwards.
It makes me want to peel my own skin off. It just,
honestly. It's like Dettol your brain, like your memory bank, just like Dettol in bleach.
Absolutely. I want to, just douse myself in
This is relevant, by the way. We're not just
Steve was an all-round prick, douchebag, pervert, whatever you want to call him. All the names under the sun. He also posted online under a pseudonym about his obsession with Susan, and he would post these videos of himself. He would post songs and song lyrics and poetry and poems and just all levels of creepiness.
Poems are so shit and all.
I know, yeah. They were really bad.
Yes, because he can't do anything.
Yeah.
So in 2003, Stephen ends up confessing his love for Susan, which obviously he recorded. And she kind of says to him, you know, I'm your daughter-in-law. I'm married to your son. That's the line. That's where
she
it ends.
He says, oh, I've been meaning to talk to you about this.
Because
he says, I can't think of anything else but you. Like, I've fallen in love with you. It's like weird fucking... It's like he's watched a film and just got all into it, you know? He's like, thinks he's living in a film.
He starts it off, though, as if like, in his delusion that it's reciprocated. Like,
Yeah. He writes in his diaries that she's in love with him and, like...
Deluded.
It's weird because he goes as far as to literally write down, she finds me sexually attractive. Like,
That just shows the level of delusion, though, doesn't
it? That's it, because she flat out, like, on this recording, just turns him down. Yeah. And that is so, why he kept this recording or whatever, like, how humiliating to have a rejection, like, just there for you to listen to.
It doesn't stop him, though, does it?
No.
Well, his diary entries after that video were still saying how much that she loved him.
Yeah. Just gross. So shortly after that rejection, Susan and Josh move away. So this is when they move to Utah, isn't it? And this is when she starts the job at Wells Fargo. Jumping forward a little bit, this is now December 6th, 2009, which is a Sunday. So Susan and the two boys go to church in the morning, and then afterwards Susan visits a neighbor, I think it is, to catch up or whatever. But Susan ends up complaining that she wasn't feeling well and wanted to take a nap.
I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah, because it's obviously well known that Josh at this point wasn't being that nice to Susan, and no. That's an understatement. So he was controlling, never cooked, never helped around the house.
In fact, refused to cook.
Yeah, flat out refused. But she'd mentioned to this neighbour friend that morning of the Sunday, Josh had prepared pancakes.
And brought her a blanket because she was cold.
Yeah. So the theory is that he'd put something in the pancakes.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
this is going to be a weird way of putting it, but you'll know what I mean. I can't put it any other way. He hasn't got the balls to kill her in any other way.
Yeah.
Because he is a floppy, overcooked noodle.
Yes.
With a shit goatee beard, and that never leads to good things.
Yeah. It's not a great look. Not a great look. So the next day, Monday, December 7th, Josh and Susan don't show up for work. And Charlie and Braden don't get dropped off at daycare either. So Josh's mother and his sister Jen go looking for them.
Jen is the family outcast. Let's just say that right at the top.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's definitely the black sheep of the Powell family. I.e., she's normal.
Yeah. She's got common sense as well, like,
and a sense of justice.
Yeah, and she knows what Josh and and her dad are like.
Oh, she knows.
She fully knows. Yeah. So they end up calling the police when they can't gain contact with Josh and Susan. The police end up breaking into the Powell family home. And Susan's purse and her wallet, all her, you know, identification, bank cards, everything like that are still in the home. Josh ends up coming home around 5 p.m. with the two boys, saying that he'd taken the boys camping in the middle of the night.
Yeah, in -3 degrees.
Yeah, in a blizzard, basically. Yeah. In an absolute blizzard. And he said that Susan had stayed at home. I mean, that's not suspicious in the slightest. No. Who goes camping in the middle of the night? In any weather?
Even if he was used his weird brain and was like, oh, I want to take the boys camping, if Susan was at home and conscious and whatever, as a mother, you'd be like, no, you're not. You want to go camping, mate, in a blizzard, you go camping, leave the boys here. Like,
absolutely.
Obviously.
Yeah.
You absolute lunatic.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Just the worst, like, made up excuse. It's just ridiculous.
And the police note that there's two fans pointed at a couch,
which has been recently washed,
recently cleaned, and it's still damp. So
you know what I think there? I think that he poisoned her and she coughed up blood all over it, because they found very small splatters of blood, like next to the sofa, as if like a cough.
Yeah.
He definitely poisoned her.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was confirmed that it was her blood, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So the police end up going out to where he said they camped, and they find no evidence of a campsite.
No.
Which is no surprise, really, is there?
Because it was a lie.
Because there was a lie.
It was a lie.
What they also found in the home was life insurance policies.
Oh, here we go again. So there's always a fucking life insurance policy.
Yeah, always, always. So the police also sees the family van. I assume it's some kind of minivan.
It is a minivan, yeah.
Yeah. And also Josh rented a car.
Yeah, that's so odd because he rented that after leaving the police station, right? Mm. And they had seized his car but told him you can have it back in just a few moments.
Yeah.
If you just wait around. He waited for 5 or 10 minutes and then went straight to the airport and rented a car and abandoned his at the police station.
Yeah, and he clocked up 807 miles on that rental car. 800 miles. That's
so
insane.
That, so I saw a graph and he could have got to about 5 different states.
Yeah.
In that mileage.
Yeah.
So he could definitely crossed state lines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So which that's what I mean, they've got so potentially 6 states in which to find her body.
It's just ridiculous. It's never going to happen, is it?
Ridiculous. He also purchased a new cell phone, which was activated 80 miles north of Salt Lake City, which was where just outside of where they lived.
Yeah, because hadn't he driven back 20 minutes?
Yeah,
to make the phone call.
To make the phone call, yeah.
Yeah,
because he calls her phone and leaves voicemails, doesn't he?
Oh, they're so badly acted.
Just ridiculous.
Like their voicemails, you wouldn't leave anyone. Like I pick my wife up every day, right? I text her when I leave on my way. When I get there, I literally write outside. There's no reason to get any more elaborate than that, right?
Exactly.
But he's all, oh, hi, Susan. Hello. Yes, it's your husband. It's me. I'm just sitting outside your work right now at 3:35 p.m. I'm just waiting for you to come out to the car. So when you come out, I'll see you. Okay, see you soon. Bye.
Ridiculous.
Dickhead. Yeah. Nobody leaves voicemails. Exactly. Nobody, because no one listens to them.
Exactly. No. Yeah. And even if you do listen to them, you listen to 3 seconds and you delete it, don't you?
Yeah. As soon as you realize it's someone trying to sell you something or one of those stupid robot voices.
Oh. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Incidentally,
radio bot.
Yeah. Incidentally, her cell phone was found in the family minivan, as if they wouldn't be able to, you know, tell.
Yeah, her cell phone's there and then her other belongings are in the house and then she's missing. It's like everyone knows you keep your cell phone on your mobile on you all the time. Mm-hmm. And like you would take your possessions with you. You're not going to leave bits of your identity all over the place, are you?
No. You're certainly not going to leave the house without your car keys or handbag.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This has got real echoes of the Watts murders, this.
Oh, Chris Watts.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't think I could do that case.
No.
Oh, this one's worse, I think.
Do you think this one's worse?
Yeah,
you're probably right.
Don't know.
Oh. It's just 6 of one and half a dozen of the other, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to say. I don't think it's really it's comparable, but not comparable in terms of this one's worse kind of thing.
Yeah.
Actually, the same. Sorry, no, I won't. No, go ahead. Spoilers. No, sorry, I spoil it.
Incidentally, Josh filed for bankruptcy in 2007 with over $200,000 worth of debt.
How the fuck do you get into $200,000 debt? Who's lending you money when you owe that much?
His credit must have been two.
Non-existent.
Just like, how?
Because he took control of the money, didn't he? And he would give her $100 for like all the groceries, all the petrol, feed the kids, everything. That's all she was allowed to have.
Exactly. He was really strict with her spending, but he could spend.
So where was the rest of the money going? That's the thing.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, exactly.
This is when she recorded the video So this was she recorded it in July 2008, and this was her recording property damage that she said Josh had done, and that she had written a secret will. And she says on the tape, "I want it documented that there is extreme turmoil in our marriage." She also says, more importantly, "If I die, it may not be an accident, even if it looks like one."
Yeah. And this is her filming herself saying
this. Saying this.
Yeah. She's literally, that family were obsessed with videos. Everyone.
I mean, thank God she did do that, though.
Yeah.
Hers and Rodney's side, though. Yeah.
She put the tape and the secret will and everything in a safety deposit box in a bank.
Where she worked. It was the bank where she worked.
Yeah. Yeah. So no one could ever get to it. It was just safely there. So if anything did happen, bang.
Yeah. She wrote that. She described how bad her marriage was, and that she knew that Josh had taken out $1 million life insurance policy on her.
How it looks awful for her, though. Like, I know, to discover that. Every day and just be...
I'd have just left. I'd have just grabbed the kids in the car and drove to her parents' house.
I was just going to say, I suppose this is the thing sometimes, like when you are so like devout or so religious and... Yeah. I think for the most part, it was just, she just stayed in it for the kids, really, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think probably in the back of her head, she didn't really think anything would happen. Yeah. I think maybe she kind of did, but I think in the back of her mind, she probably didn't.
Oh, no, I don't think, yeah.
She probably talked herself out of it, wouldn't she? She probably would have thought, or maybe, no, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't do that. It won't come to that kind of thing. Because you try and think the best, don't you? You think it'll work out, you know, you try and be, I think from a woman's perspective, definitely you would think that it will work itself out and you'll be back on track and everything will, you know, just look at, like, return to normal.
Yeah. I mean, not it's not the same level, but it's still terrible. But like domestic abuse cases, when it's like the female that's abused, like the amount of times that they'll leave and go back and leave and go back because I don't know, it's just that whole, like, no, it will work, or they'll change, or they do love me.
Because it's the whole, I'll never do it again, I'm ashamed, X, Y, Z to make it up. But then it might be good for, like, 6 months, but then down the line, it's always going to come back.
That's it.
Always. Exactly. If your partner hits you once, it will never be just once. That will happen again. 100%. If you're prepared to hit someone one time, you're going to be prepared to hit them full stop.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially if you stay with them, that's giving them sort of authority to do it again as well. It's so, like,
I know
you're saying you're okay with that, that just happened. Yeah. Oh, I know I can get away with that, so I'm going to do it again.
They're because she won't leave. Never leave.
They won't that's leave. It. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And no one willingly goes back to these things thinking that they're going to get murdered in the day, even if you're sort of like, you know, it got to a point where I feel like, you know, he could have murdered me. Mm. And this works the other way around as well. I'm not saying this definitely works the other way around gender-wise. But no one goes back.
Not often, though. You could.
Yeah, statistically not as often.
Yeah.
But no one ever goes back sort of like, oh, well, yeah, you know, he's probably going to kill me, but I'm going to go back. They believe that they'll change.
Yeah.
Or have changed.
It's or true. In a lot of cases, like these guys get, like, it's not just an emotional hold they get. Like, oftentimes they take control of bank accounts or anything like that. So really, they can't leave even if they really want to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Money, really hard.
No access to money, particularly if they've got kids. It's even worse.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, because they become bartering chips, don't they?
Yeah.
More often, you know, so many. But I mean, times.
Even if it was just like an escape situation, like dead of night, get the fuck out of there with the kids.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got two kids in tow, it's not going to be easy to find a place to live. To these shelters and whatnot, but they're often full, especially if it's the middle of the night or something like that. There's never enough beds in those places.
No. That's true, yeah. That's and it. You probably wouldn't feel safe in, like, sheltered accommodation either because you're with strangers, basically.
Yeah. Not to mention that, but, like, you with more people probably screaming and shouting because that's the kind of places they tend to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Terrible.
Hi, it's Mike from the After Horror Podcast telling you to listen to the After Horror Podcast. It's four idiots who occasionally talk about the film that we're supposed to be, you know, like, doing and stuff. Now give it a listen. Or don't, like, I'm not your dad, but, you know, I think you'd enjoy it.
So Josh obviously becomes suspect number one. However, he's not arrested.
No.
Ever.
Yeah,
ever.
True, yeah. He's
never arrested. He's interrogated a few times, yeah. But he's never arrested.
Well, to be fair to the police, it is because there's no evidence.
There's no evidence. There's
because
no body.
There's no body.
There's no body. The two kids are spoken to by police. And Charlie in particular says a couple of things that are quite damning.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlie says that his mom went with them camping.
Heartbreaking. This
it is really heartbreaking. That interview with Charlie. Yeah. He's five at the end of the day, four or five at the end of the day.
Yeah.
He says mom stayed at the Dinosaur National Park. She stayed where the crystals are.
Oh, yeah, man. This is the heartbreaking thing. Like, it's almost like the kids like knew. I don't know if they knew or like.
Yeah, and
I don't know. They were there going, oh.
Yeah, the younger one, Braden, he apparently drew a picture of the van with three people in it and told the social services that mommy was in the trunk.
Mm. Yeah. I watched something.
Which later
like,
was
on
confirmed
this...
by a sniffer dog.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't that car. It
wasn't shit, was that a different car?
That was Michael's car. The one when they go to the...
The junkyard.
The junkyard, yeah.
The one he wanted high-res mm-hmm. images
yeah.
of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
wow.
that car. So Josh ends up renting a house with his two sons. And obviously he's still with his dad at this time, but he ends up renting a house for him and Charlie and Braden.
Right down the street from his dad.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right down the street. Yeah. So
did you see the video? Sorry. Did you see the video the first time they took him in? Like it was the same day she was missing.
Mm. Yeah.
And the police obviously called him to the station because he weirdly, not weirdly, but like he wasn't going to go. Like he was doing anything he could not to go.
He was like doing laundry. He was like washing towels and stuff. And they were like, come on, you need to go.
Cleaning
you need to go. And he's like,
out.
No, I need to do this.
Yeah.
Just.
And then he was sitting in like the corner of the police station, like a pathetic child, like wringing his hands and being all that stupid, gormless look on his face the whole time.
Yep. That's him. So, yeah, they think that he rented out the house in down the, you know, not far away from his dad's house, but he never actually moved in there. He stayed with his dad and his siblings. So that's Michael, John and Alina. So in late 2010, both Josh and Steve, his dad, claimed that Susan had abandoned the family due to mental illness and that she'd basically run off with another man.
Yeah.
Which is totally unsubstantiated. There's not literally no evidence. Even her parents turned around and was like, this is absolute bullshit. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Just nonsense. This is when police turned
around. Even Jennifer, his own sister,
even his
was
own
like,
sister.
Oh, hell no. She's not run off.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
She advocated for Susan all the way through, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she went as far as to wear a wire into
she
the house
did.
To a family dinner to try and get them to confess, which she then did aggressively.
Yeah. They threw her out, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because she tried to talk to Josh on her own, on his own. And Steve intervened, didn't he? And he was like, get out of the house. Yeah. Because that's on the documentary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair play to her for doing that. Brave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So brave. this is when police turn their attention to Michael, which is Josh's brother. So he had recently sold his Ford Taurus to a wrecking yard in Pendleton, Oregon.
Yeah.
Shortly after Susan's disappearance. And he'd ordered satellite images of the lot.
Yeah, that was Stephen.
So
the other brother, Michael, so he was he was mentally ill.
Yeah.
Like that was confirmed.
He wasn't right, was he?
He had bipolar.
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
Schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
And general sort of depression. He was diagnosed with these things, so he was...
The police end up finding the car and get a cadaver dog, which indicated in the trunk. But the DNA tests were inconclusive. Yeah. So
to put that high res satellite imagery into perspective, this is not your Google Earth.
Oh images. No! Oh no!
He wanted high res, like
he wanted 4K, like military 8K. Satellite yeah, he shit, didn't he?
Military grade visual photographs of it, and he actually went as far as to try and pay for these. Like he called this satellite company and tried to pay them. Which actually backfired in him badly in the end.
Very badly. So this is when Steve's home was searched. And this is where...
Creepy fucker.
It gets even creepier. Because what the cops find in the house is nothing short of... I don't even know what the word is. It's just a treasure.
It's a treasure trove
of perverted trophies. Yeah. So they find Susan's diaries because I think they'd been trying to get them to hand them over, didn't they? And they were saying
that,
no.
They were the reason they went to search the house.
Yeah, because
they'd
the
set
diaries.
Up a sting operation where they got members of the family to set up Honk and... What was it? Honk and...
Oh, the Honk and Wave.
That's it, Honk and Wave.
It was the Honk and Wave thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, so they set this up and they set them up in places they knew that Steve and Josh were going to go.
Because they pulled over, didn't they, and were going mad because Chuck Cox was there and Steve was like, what are you doing?
How he did not punch Stephen fucking Powell in the face, I will never know.
That just shows
self-control.
That just shows that just shows what a good guy he actually is, because he stood there and he was like, yep, come at me. I ain't gonna bite.
Because many people would have just tried to kill him there and then.
Oh, you'd have had to hold me back. And I'm 5 foot nothing.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not, I never like to say I would do this in that situation.
I know. I know what you mean.
It's hard because you don't know. If I was in that, you might just be too shell shocked.
The urge would be overwhelming, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'd get the urge just seeing that guy in the street. I wouldn't even have to know Stephen Powell, just looking at him. That horribly, horrible, weird grin he has.
The police specifically go for Susan's diaries because they wouldn't hand them over. And obviously they are integral evidence because that is Susan's account of...
The point of that sting operation, what I was saying, is that was the whole point, to try and get him to admit on camera that they had those diaries.
Yeah.
So then they could have cause to go search the house.
Yeah.
And he did, because he's an idiot.
Yes. Yep. So they go in and there's a filing cabinet. So it's one of the big metal ones with like the deep drawers, isn't it? And it's locked. They can't find a key for it and they end up breaking into it. Trigger warning. This gets dark. So inside this filing cabinet is a treasure trove of, as I said, just perverted items. So some of the things included, I mean, some of the tamer things that it included was tights and underwear and clothing.
All Susan's,
everything that we list is Susan's, or Susan had touched at some point. But then it gets weirder. So he saved... like cotton balls that she'd taken off her nail varnish and her makeup with. These were in like Ziploc bags, plastic bags.
Labeled
with the date.
Sanitary, let me just ask you a question while we're on. While we're on the labeling, I just want to ask a question. Why did he feel the need to put Susan's name on those bags?
Because he had stuff.
Because he had stuff from other women.
Other people, yeah. And even though a lot of them weren't like objects and stuff, I suppose he wouldn't want to necessarily get misconstrued. Like, because he obviously had pictures and whatever of other people, didn't he? So he specifically wants to.
Yeah.
It's an organized memorabilia box for like quick access.
Jesus.
Sorry, Esther, I interrupted you when you were saying sanitary products.
Yes,
I was going to come to that as well.
Sanitary products.
This is so
but weird.
Nail clippings.
The tubes, isn't it? Like, you know, yeah,
it's the applicator.
It's those.
Well, he could get them from the bin, couldn't he? Whereas the actual tampon, he's going to get flushed away.
Yeah.
Sorry for anyone. Like, he's not in
various clothing.
Yeah.
Just... There were videos of him dressing pillows up in her clothes.
Yeah.
What's the thing?
Can't imagine what he's doing. Well, we don't have to imagine what he was doing with those.
No,
do we
don't. We really don't.
Because he filmed himself doing it.
He filmed himself doing everything. Because he's just disturbed.
Oh, he's so
just
grim.
Really fucking disturbed. So, yeah, the cops really find all of this amongst other things.
Yeah, it just gets worse.
Yeah, so.
It gets worse.
They find, obviously, with electronic devices, there's like numerous laptops and drives yeah, all containing porn.
Oh, and VHS tapes.
VHS tapes as well, yeah. All containing porn, but not just porn. There's bestiality. There's
animated child porn.
Animated child porn. Yeah.
Arguably better than the real thing.
Just, it's so fucking depraved. But also they find that he had filmed or taken photos of the children, the girls next door.
The neighbours pretty much.
Yeah, and they were, I think one girl was 8. Yep. I can't remember how old the other girl was.
10,
but yeah.
I think.
So,
yeah,
just like remind me of like, I can't think what that documentary was on Netflix, but like where it was like, it was a religious sector, and it was a little bit like a cult, and then the leader was just like marrying and sleeping with all the underage girls and so on and so forth.
It was hiding in plain sight. Is it in plain sight? Was it that one?
Might be.
Oh, abducted in plain sight.
That's a weird one.
That's not the one I'm referring to.
His whole family, including the father.
Yeah.
No, that's not the one I'm referring to. But I mean, there are a lot of those kind of things around, isn't there? And that's what it reminds me of, like a religious sector cult leader that then like just wants to have sex or marry lots of women.
It's
and
like
underage girls.
What's his name?
What was it?
Keith Raniere from Nixium. It's like him, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, he's another one.
It was around about the same time I watched that, when that like Keep Sweet of Praying
came out.
It was around that time. I can't remember what it was. Sorry.
God. There's too many cases like that in America.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
But that's what he reminds me of, because he even looks that way. He looks very like, and the, like I said, the ego and the narcissism attached to it. Like, that there's nothing wrong with being that way, nothing wrong with being that perverse and pedophilic and voyeuristic. It's
those were the charges that against Stephen. So he had charges of voyeurism and child pornography. Just really fucking depraved. So Stephen is arrested. Chuck Cox, which is Susan's dad, he files for custody of the kids. So Washington court eventually grants Susan's parents with temporary custody of the boys. And they state that Josh has to move out of his dad's now that obviously his dad's been arrested. So if he wants to regain custody of the kids, he has to move out of his dad's house, basically. This is where they interview Charlie again. So the older son, this is. And this is the one where he says, we can't talk about Susan or camping. I always keep things secret.
Yeah.
So it sounds like his dad has just ingrained into him that they don't talk about this camping trip anymore. Yeah. If he's asked by, you know, anybody, they don't talk about it. It's a secret. Yeah. He's obviously turned it into a game, for the kids.
Yeah,
you know.
But also massively underestimated, like, the intuitiveness of children.
Yeah.
because I did see something on this where, like, it was like a very short documentary about like children that have been involved in a traumatic event and convinced that either something else has happened or they didn't see what they're saying they saw, like, no, you must have dreamt that, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that all these, it just comes up in, as we've seen in other cases where children are involved, like they'll draw the picture and they'll be like, oh, where's this? And they'll be like, oh, it's a dream I had, or so on and so forth. And then, as if nothing comes of it, as they get older, all of a sudden it just like comes out as this like massive, like, I don't know, like event for them, I guess, this massive, like, it just hits them and they're like, no, this was actually reality. And then everything falls into place. It's like the memory, they can convince you when you're a child and then the memory sort of stores it away, but then it always comes forward, it doesn't go away. It was really interesting.
That happened the opposite way with the whole Pizzagate thing, right, where the kids were saying just this wild shit about this place and like saying just mad shit.
It was like, it was all to do with like paedophiles and shit, weren't it?
Like, they would go into a dungeon. It turns out that, like, this fucking pizza restaurant hasn't even got a basement. Like, it's just complete nonsense. Yeah.
Oh god. Insane. 2011. So this is late 2011. This is where Josh's sister Jen says that she thinks that Josh is responsible for Susan's disappearance.
Yeah.
Josh undergoes a series of court-ordered evaluations, and they said that, yeah, he's got adequate parenting skills, he's got a steady employment history. Has he? Really? Hmm. And no criminal record of domestic violence.
Yeah, was he never reported, was he?
That's it, isn't it? Well, this is it.
This is it. The recommendation was that Josh is to have visitation rights several times a week, but it's supervised with a social worker. So 2012, police question Michael. So Michael is Josh's brother, the one that sold the car to the wrecking yard. And they said that he was evasive, very evasive. Like, he doesn't really give anything away in his interrogation, does he?
Jennifer said he had an over-inflated sense of loyalty towards the family.
He did, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Stephen, the dad, he was convicted in 2012 on 12 counts of voyeurism and for taking pictures of two young neighbour girls ages 8 and 10.
Yep.
Yeah,
indecent images of a minor.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So he was sentenced to serve 5 years in prison. Power sentenced 5 years in prison after being convicted of possession of child pornography. That charge had been dismissed at Powell's original trial, but was later reinstated after an appeals court ruled that the judge had erred his decision to dismiss it. Yeah. So the child porn was originally dismissed in the original trial, but they reinstated it in August of 2015. Steve Powell was actually released from Washington State Prison and placed under community supervision for 2 years. So he was released in 2017, and he'd served 7 years.
Just too much leniency.
But he died of a heart attack. Shortly after, I think it was two years later.
This is after, bear in mind, in his trial, he tried to blame Susan's disappearance on his own mentally ill son.
Yeah.
He was a scumbag in the highest order.
He really was.
Like, still, even after, hang on, we haven't got to that part yet, have we?
It's the next bit now. So, fast forward a little bit. This is February 2012. The social worker goes to Josh's house for a supervised visit with the boys. He lets the boys in the house and shuts the door in her face. So the social worker is Elizabeth Griffin Hall. She calls 911.
This is a really irritating call.
Because the operator is just doesn't.
Well, both of them. Really. Well, and I'm not blaming anyone for anything, because obviously there's no way in your mind you think what happened is going to happen.
Exactly.
I think there's no sense of urgency from either one of them, not even the social worker calling. But for starters, she doesn't even tell the dispatcher the address.
She doesn't know the address?
She rambles. She
doesn't
says,
know the address?
Oh, can you not find me on GPS? No, I can't.
Ridiculous. So the call actually lasts 6 minutes.
Yeah.
The police are and emergency services aren't dispatched until 2 minutes after that.
Well,
and the police
says,
don't get there until 13 minutes.
Yeah, because the dispatcher says, she says, how long are they going to be? Like, I'm worried, be quick. And he says, oh, well, it's not a priority. They've got to prioritise life-threatening calls. And the irony... Absolutely. When he says that, knowing the outcome is horrific.
Yeah. So she calls 911 because he shut her out the house and it's a supervised visit. So she's trying to explain this on the call to the 911 operator, who doesn't really understand what the emergency is. He doesn't think it's life-threatening, obviously. But then she ends up saying that she can smell gasoline, which is obviously a call.
Earlier in the day.
Yeah. And I think the operator actually tells her to back out, like step away from the house if she can smell gasoline, and make her way back down the driveway. And obviously the house eventually goes up in flames. When the emergency services get there, they go in, they find Josh and the two boys.
This gets so heartbreaking. This
just it really does. Fucking heartbreaking. So trigger warning, we're going to talk about the death of a minor, two minors. So post-mortem examination on Josh, Charles and Braden confirmed that they all died of carbon monoxide poisoning. However, the coroner did say that the two children had significant chopping injuries to their neck and necks and head. It was a hatchet. They find a hatchet.
Oh.
I don't get this though. It's completely senseless because Josh has committed suicide, really. Anyway, so why, even if the kids did say, yes, daddy done something, or, you know, granddad done something, they're both not gonna be there, leave the kids out of it.
And the worst part of it was they said from like the investigation they could tell that the boys were trying to run back to their room where their toys were, and they were holding hands.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Which was,
it's frankly fucking devastating. Like, it just gets progressively worse and worse.
Completely unnecessary. Like, I mean, 50% of this case is completely unnecessary, but I mean, it's just that bit is just ridiculously unnecessary. If you're planning on offing yourself anyway because you're a coward, then fucking fine.
Leave the kids.
He's beyond a fucking coward. And the thing is, he left a voicemail like for the family.
Yeah.
And he was saying, oh,
I can't. He sent emails as well.
I can't go on. I can't live without my kids. So fucking kill yourself then. Don't worry about them. Leave them to get on with their lives. They'll go live with that, like, old Chuck Cox, and they'll have a great life.
Yeah, exactly.
But no.
Yeah. It's so tragic.
The records also showed that Josh had withdrawn $7,000 from his bank account and had donated his children's toys and books to local charities the day before this happened. He also named his brother, Michael, as the main beneficiary of his life insurance policy. And unfortunately, a year later in 2013, Michael ends up taking his own life by jumping off a parking lot. Was it seven?
You can see the photograph of that if you're so inclined as well.
I have seen a photograph of it, because you can see him sitting on the edge, can't you?
Yeah, well, you can see the result of it too.
Oh, no, I don't want to see that.
Yeah,
it's in the documentary. It's actually in the documentary, the picture.
Oh, is it? I don't remember seeing that bit.
Yeah, yeah. Did it twice. Yeah.
I'm surprised that I put that in there. Yeah. That's
quite, so am I. They literally only blurred out the head too.
Jesus.
That's quite dark.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of deep dives on this, particularly the Cold podcast. That is a massive deep dive into this case. Highly recommend it. It is very long, though. There's a lot of detail, but also the documentary, the two-part documentary that is on Hey You, which you can subscribe to via... You can do it through Sky or Now TV, but you can also do it through Amazon. Other streaming services are available, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that particular, the disappearance of Susan Cox is the two-part documentary. Yeah. And there's a ton of stuff on YouTube as well. Lots of like news reports and like summary videos and stuff like that. If you do want to know more, we have pretty much covered the
one thing that we haven't kind of mentioned is that Josh previously mentioned about like how a good way to dispose of a body and not be caught.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that bit. Yeah, go
which is obviously how they believe where they believe that Susan is, but as like Paul's kind of said, the radius and the what was it like
it was like a quarry or something. It was all to do with
mines particularly, because they actually searched a few.
Because
one of the mines had recently been doused in gasoline and set alight.
They're so like a lot of them are obviously out of commission because they're dangerous, but they're so deep underground and stuff. They're dangerous, hidden, and they believe that Susan is in a mine somewhere, but where, which one, it's just needle in a haystack, isn't it?
There's been a lot of people searching that area over the years, and they've found
the YouTube
bones.
Series. There's some guys, they heavy D sparks, that's it. They've been looking for a while because they've got a lot of like excavating equipment and like helicopters and stuff.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And they've been volunteering to search for a long time, and they've been looking. I've been watching their videos. Yeah, they're good.
It would be amazing It would be amazing for her family if they did find her. You know, because she's just lying somewhere. He's just threw her down somewhere, and that's it. Now she's
lost.
Yeah,
it's terrible. Maybe forever.
He's such a. He has just so little respect, like such disregard. Like, I'm happy to just get my, like, set my kids on fire and just throw my missus down a mining shaft. Like, that's not, obviously, you have to be sick and anyway to kill someone, but it's just an extra level of like depravity, isn't it? Just like, fuck all, basically.
And I think for him, it was the control aspect. He was controlling everything.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was, because he tried to control her when she was alive, you know, with, you know, don't spend this money, you can only have this, you can only do this and this, that, and the other. And it's that level of control, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted to maintain it.
I think the father had an equal amount of control over him.
Yeah,
he did. I agree.
He did, yeah. Yeah.
I think it did for the most part with the family in general. It just seems to be that the girls didn't so much. But again, and I don't mean to generalise, but in a lot of like highly religious families, like it is very much like a male-oriented.
Very patriarchal. Particularly the LDS. Well, that's Mormon, basically. The LDS.
Yeah,
Mormon.
It is, yes.
So, yeah. They're allowed to have multiple wives. Like, yeah. It's all in favour of the man, all of it.
Yeah.
So the daughters were probably like held like resentment anyway, and probably were just more rebellious, hence why they were a bit more.
One of them was.
Yeah. Well, the other one.
The
did,
other one is still
have...
defending him to this day.
But aww. She did mention she suspected him sometimes. So there was.
She did, and then
there
she retracted it.
Because of the, but I think that's because of the control, because you've got the, there will be an element of fear. I'm not sticking up for her, but there probably was fear. There as well.
Okay.
Then, but not now. Like, the father's gone. The brother's gone.
Well, nobody's left. Mm. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody that was involved or suspected of being involved is now dead.
Yeah. It's and so tragic. Just the pure fact that they've both died without revealing where that body is.
Just
An extra, it's just an extra fuck you to
her. I was just going to say it's an extra fuck you.
Because he said, Josh was still playing like the victim, like, oh, I can't go on. This is so terrible. Everyone's accusing me and my life's awful. Yeah, everyone's accusing you, mate, because you've done it. But he's just left. He's just left.
Scumbag.
Yeah, he's just left playing the victim. He's left this world playing the victim and took his fucking kids.
But that's
with
him and Stephen all over. They're pathetic. They're so pathetic.
They are.
Like, they're the sort of people that blame everything that happens to them on other people.
Yeah.
Nothing's their fault. It's always someone else's fault why it's happening to them.
Yeah.
That's the kind of people they are.
It's such
just awful, scummy people.
It really is.
I'm so glad I chose this class.
you're just a
don't
random.
Worry about it.
So that was the case of Susan Cox Powell. Our next episode, it'll be the episode after the next episode, so it will be episode 42. And we're back
the answer to everything.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's Sam's choice.
Yeah. So I have chosen to do Angela Simpson.
I don't know this one.
So you might know it because there was a clip, there was an interview clip where the voice was used and become very viral, predominantly on TikTok, where a lot of women... we're kind of using this.
I know exactly who it is.
And it goes something.
You tortured this man, didn't you? And she's like, yes.
It's not verbatim, but it's she's like, oh, I don't know why the media said that the motherfucker couldn't walk. He could walk perfectly fine. I walked into my house, tortured him, and murdered him. she just gives zero fucks. So
she's very forthright. She's like, she doesn't blink.
She's so
matter of fact.
Like,
oh. Was he the abuser or something?
No, he didn't. No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, cool.
He didn't. So, I will say no more on it. It's a.
I only know a little bit from hearing that audio on TikTok going, is this real? And then I Googled it and I was like, oh shit, this is an actual interview with her saying, yeah, I did. I did torture him. I did murder him. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find the clip. Crazy. I'll see if I can find the clip and then we can include it.
Wow.
Just because it's just so...
Bonus, isn't it?
We definitely need to include the audio on that because it's incredible.
You need to... Because I think that sort of sums her up and how, matter of fact she is. And and obviously it's what people know from the case, really. So, Angela Simpson.
I've heard this one.
Excellent. Episode 42 will be Angela Simpson. And on that note, listeners, always remember to delete your Google history.